Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Social media, some people call it a waste of time and not productive. What's so important about going on Facebook and posting what you cook for dinner or blogging about your half-baked notions about Congress? Well, social media is not the latest fad. It's been something around that's been around for 2,000 years. That's the observation of Tom Standage. He is the digital editor for The Economist. He's the author of multiple books, all of them interesting. The latest one is Writing on the Wall, Social Media, the First 2,000 Years. Tom, welcome to The Source.
Hello, it's good to be here.
So I want to speed through the timeline and then try and fill in the blanks, and I want to talk about what this really all means. So you're saying that the first communications that we had, people sharing letters and notes and copying things down, and whether it be on wax tablets or and then sharing it with each other, like in a Roman era with letters of the being shared, and then it was all very social media. So the definition, real quickly, of what is social media?
Well, I like to say that social media is media we get from other people, and it's exchanged along social networks, and it allows you to have a distributed discussion or feel part of a community with people who are not physically present. And obviously that's what we do today on Facebook and Twitter and all the rest, but actually if you look at history, there are lots of situations where these kinds of social media environments emerged. And the first one that I've managed to find, the earliest example, is in the Roman era, because the Romans were quite literate, and obviously you need to have literacy to have a social media system. People need to be able to read and write. But also you needed it to be cheap to deliver information and to copy information. Today it's cheap for us because we have broadband. For the Romans it was cheap because they had slaves. And slaves could deliver things very quickly and could also copy things out. And so it meant it was possible for someone like Cicero, the Roman statesman, to write to his friend Atticus every day and exchange news with him and copy letters and all that sort of thing. And so we see the first social media ecosystem emerging among the Roman elite in the first century before Christ.
And then from social media, we went to more of a top-down media with the invention of newspapers and broadcast structures.
Yes. So what I do in the book is I look at these examples of social media, starting with the Romans, but later examples, Martin Luther, various pamphlet campaigns, the Tudor court, Anne Boleyn and her friends had this kind of Facebook that they used, which was literally a book they passed around. So all of that was, looks quite similar to what we do today. But then it all changed in the 19th century because technologies were invented that made it possible for a small number of people to send their thoughts to a very, very large audience very efficiently. And initially that was the steam press, and you get the first newspapers with really large circulation in the U.S. in the late 19th century. And then in the 20th century, obviously, we had radio and TV, and that meant that you had this incredible concentration of the ability to reach people. And the other thing about newspapers and radio and TV is they're one way. They are a means for sending information to lots of people, but you don't get to have a conversation. And a social media system is two-way, and so it's a very different dynamic. And what we see today is that the internet has brought social media back to the fore. It's made social media efficient enough that it can compete with broadcast media once again. So I'm arguing that we're really sort of going back to the way things were before mass media emerged, starting in about the 1830s.
And the social media, the system that we had before this corporate top-down structure, media of newspapers and broadcasters, there was a lot of innovation, idea sharing, and just an explosion of ideas, people sitting around coffee chocolate houses and talking about the penny universities, as you call them. So it's a good thing.
Well, I think so. I mean, it's very interesting that if you buy my argument that we had social media in the past, then it turns out that all of the arguments we're having about social media today arose in the past as well. And people ask things like, doesn't this trivialize national debate? Doesn't this mean that people are wasting their time exchanging, pointless information? They argued about what the right way to respond if you were criticized in social media. What should you do? And so it turns out we can learn lessons from history. And a nice example of that is, yes, just what you're saying, that when coffee houses became popular in England in the late 1600s, they were criticized, just as social media is today, for leading young people astray and, distracting them from doing more useful things. And in both Oxford and Cambridge universities, the professors were very worried that the young people weren't going to learn anything and that this was going to be the ruin of the country. And they said that coffee houses were great enemies to diligence and industry. And the reason that young people went to them, and not just young people, was that you never knew what you might discover or what you might learn. It was a very fertile, rich, information-sharing environment. And that actually, in the long run, meant that they were great crucibles of innovation. All sorts of amazing things came out of coffee houses, like the scientific revolution and the financial revolution. The London Stock Exchange started as a coffee house. Isaac Newton and his fellow scientists met and discussed and devised theories in coffee houses. And we now look upon that time as a period of amazing innovation. So I think there's a lesson for us today that we are going to have the same sorts of results potentially coming out of social media, which allow people and ideas who otherwise wouldn't mix to mix and encounter each other and create new things.
It's interesting that we're talking about this during our public radio pledge drive, because we're trying to tell everyone how great it is to have this form of communication where we have professionals who have trained, who are dedicated, who are able to gather resources and go off into the world and then report to many people. It's a very efficient and effective way, it has a lot of integrity to it in providing information. But if you just have a social media system, how does one compare to the other?
Well, obviously, I'm also in the position that I am a journalist that works for The Economist. What I'm arguing is that the rebirth of social media on the internet means that what we're going to have in future is actually going to be some sort of hybrid that we're all trying to figure out that combines aspects of the mass media and aspects of social media. And we can already see that the two interact with each other, that when something like Gangnam Style goes viral on the internet and people are sharing it, that it gets picked up by the mainstream media. So it's not an either-or proposition. And, what we're doing at The Economist and what all established media organizations are doing is trying to work out how they change their models to reflect the reality of a social media environment and to take advantage of it. So I think we're all involved in this big experiment to try and work out what the best way to combine them is. But the point is that social was the way that information got around for hundreds of years, and it was really overshadowed by mass media, which concentrated access to the ability to publish. And I think it's a great thing that publishing has been more democratized. But what we need to work out is how to combine the good things about that and access to publishing with what you're talking about, which is enabling people to find the best information, the most reliable information, and so on.
Even in the golden age of the classic mass media, was it really something that was being shared by the masses, the social media? Was it really being shared around society, or was it still just the elite?
Well, the nice thing about social media today is that it's far more widely available than social media was in the past, and this is largely a function of literacy. So in the Roman period, obviously, the Roman elite were the main users of this. They could afford the slaves that they needed to drive their social media system, and they were also educated and literate, and only a small fraction of the population would have been in those days. And what we see happening is, over the years, access to the media, to social media systems, becomes broader and broader. So Luther is able to write pamphlets about the Catholic Church and what he saw.
And bring about the Reformation. Tom, we got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. This is The Source on KSTX. We're talking about social media, actually 2,000 years old. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. I'm talking with Tom Standage. He is an editor over at The Economist magazine, one of the greatest magazines that you can read, tell you about not just the news today, but the news that's coming up real soon. And he's also written numerous books, all of them fascinating. One of them, the latest one, Writing on the Wall, Social Media, the First 2,000 Years. So, Tom, let me ask you about memes. Memes, Richard Dawkins came up with the term to describe sort of an idea, a unit of an idea. Yeah. And we've certainly seen the birth of memes in social media. What is that?
Well, Yes, the idea is a meme is a thing that spreads, and so, you know, Gangnam Style would be an example of that. Or the woman who posted a video where she's dancing around the office and announces that she's quitting her job, which went viral last week. So those sorts of things are examples of memes. They are things that can sort of infect the media sphere in the same way that a virus can spread through a population. And actually, this is an ancient idea, and you get examples of this if you look back through history. So a good example is what happened to Martin Luther when he published his, he just wrote down his 95 theses. This was a list of things that he thought that the church had got wrong about indulgences, and he wanted to have a debate about them. And people started copying this list and giving it to their friends because it was pretty explosive stuff. And one of his contemporaries pointed out that it only took 2 weeks for this list to spread throughout the whole of Germany, and then a month to spread throughout the whole of Europe. And this was a great surprise to Martin Luther. He wasn't expecting this. But he realized that this ability to spread an idea, if people were sufficiently supportive of it, they would pass it on to their friends, was something he could take advantage of. And so he followed up with a series of pamphlets which were printed, and he just literally gave the text to the printer in his village, who would print 1,000 copies, and then they would spread to the next town, and the printers in those towns would print their own copies. And there were millions of pamphlets flying around Europe during the 1520s as a result of what Luther was doing. And so the idea that the Catholic Church needed to be changed was a meme that Martin Luther started and which led to the Reformation. So this idea of memes, we think of it as modern, and we now have a name for it, but actually it's been going on for hundreds of years.
And you make the comparison to a virus, that it spreads through the population, through the matrix, I mean, like a network, super network.
Yeah.
One person, then that person spreads it to five people, and they spread it to another five, and it's just boom, and it just goes through the entire population.
Yeah.
And it can be a good virus or a bad virus.
Well, yes. So one of the things about social media is it can spread untruths as well as it can spread truths. And this is something that the Romans recognized. They talked about the fact that that gossip and rumor was not always accurate, but it would spread. And they had a social media system as well, where the elite passed letters of news around. The Roman newspaper was the Acta Diurna. It was published in the Forum of Rome, and only one copy of it was produced each day.
Yeah, they would hang it up in the Forum, and then people would come and read it.
Exactly. Well, they would come and note bits down, and then they would write letters to their friends in which they would quote parts of it, and sometimes they'd copy the whole thing down and send that to their friends.
And Julius Caesar, he was in charge of this thing. It was his baby.
It was Julius Caesar who got it started. So he's kind of the godfather of the whole media industry in that sense.
So to show you the power and information closely linked.
Well, yes, I suppose so. I mean, the thing is that he didn't really centrally control what was happening, and he tried to use it himself for propaganda purposes. So Caesar wrote, for example, a book about the Gallic Wars in which he was explaining why he had conquered the whole of France, and he was trying to justify that he had done this in the name of Rome and not just for his own glory. And the way he got the message out was by writing this book and putting it into circulation. And the books also traveled socially in the Roman period, so people would read it, pass it on to their friends, maybe copy bits of it out, have copies made of the whole book if they thought it was good enough to keep in their library. And so Caesar had to use this social media system to spread his own message as well.
But we have a closed system versus an open system comparison. You know, a closed system being where you have a broadcaster, like I have the microphone right now, and
right,
I can get callers in, but, you know, I get to really call the shots, or I got the TV camera in the studio. But an open system where you have everyone has the ability to input information, and what comes out in the shake, we don't know.
No, and this is, again, a very long-running debate about whether it's safe to allow anyone to publish. And so when the printing press showed up, people started, you know, publishing all sorts of things which the people in authority didn't necessarily approve of. So
the governments have always been trying to do that. We would, you know, have to license printing presses, or
exactly,
you know, Nazi Germany would issue radios that could only get one radio station, and that's the one they controlled.
Exactly. So this is a very long-running debate. And what we see is, printers saying things. So the stationers' company, they were the company that had a monopoly on printing in England in the 1500s. And they said, let us control this to the government. Let us decide who can print what. because that way we can make sure that, you know, the wrong stuff doesn't get into print. And of course, the reason they wanted to do that was that they wanted a monopoly. They wanted to be able to maintain high prices for printing things for other people, and they didn't want just anyone to be able to set up a printing press and print anything. So they had this very much vested interest in having a very controlled media environment, and there was a very long-running battle with people who wanted to have an open environment and print whatever they wanted to print. And this all blew up in Britain in the 1640s with the Civil War. The government collapsed and couldn't control printing anymore, and we had this amazing outpouring of printing, and anyone could print whatever they wanted. And so that was really the sort of the beginning of a completely free press. And that's the, we look at the origins of the doctrine of the free press and the First Amendment in the U.S. It goes back to Milton writing about this in the 1640s and saying, you know, actually a free press is the best way to figure out what's true. Just let everyone say what they want to say and have a battle in the marketplace of ideas.
Well, sometimes the battle of the marketplace of ideas can turn into a real battle, and that's I don't know what to make of that. Well, Thomas Stanton, I want to thank you. Standage, thank you so much for calling in, participating in The Source today. Interesting book, fascinating take on social media. All your other books, fascinating as well. And then thank you so much. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon. It's 3:53. I'm Steve Short, and this is the Texas Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Each time you listen to KSTX, you know you'll get a lot back. Knowledge, insight, maybe even a laugh. Today, we're asking you to give something back, your gift of financial support. We count on listener contributions to pay for just about everything we do. Your pledge now keeps programs such as The Source on the air. Take a moment now and make a pledge online at tpr.org or call 800-622-8977 to pledge now. Joining me in the studio this afternoon is Ryan Lloyd.
Good afternoon, and we do have a goal to meet for the top of the hour, and I know we could do it if we just put our minds to it. We have about $3,400 to go for the top of the hour. Let's see here. That's about 6 business memberships. I think we could do that, Steve, right?
We can do that, or McLean Circle memberships.
And if you're a business leader out there, just think about how much Texas Public Radio can connect you to your patrons and how much they know that you support public radio in your community. Give us a call right now if you're a business decision maker in your organization. 1-800-622-8977. Or as Steve mentioned, there is the McLean Circle membership. That's $1 a day. It equals $365. And that membership is basically gets you into the premium level of membership here at TPR.
It does. And there are lots of great gifts that come with membership as a McLean Circle member. You can see all of those online at tpr.org. It's a terrific group of listener members who support TPR with at least $1 a day or $365 a year. In return, they receive some special benefits, including a fabulous party each year, and they have satisfaction of taking a real leadership role in supporting Texas Public Radio. How do you join? Pledge $1 a day, $365 a year at 800-622-8977 or at tpr.org. Your membership at this level, like others, may be broken into monthly or quarterly payments to make budgeting for this gift a little bit easier. It really is easy, and it makes all the difference. The number again is 800-622-8977 and online at tpr.org.
You know, and Steve, maybe if you maybe can do more than a dollar a day, maybe you do $2 a day, then you become a McLean Circle friend. That's for those who just give a little bit more. We have a membership level just for you, and those friends receive the new McLean embroidered boat bag, the book How to Listen to Great Music, the sweet TPR tote by Jason Willame, and your choice of shirt. And then we go up from there. The McLean Circle director is a $1,200 pledge of support, and the McLean Circle producer is $2,400. Whatever you're comfortable with, give us a call right now to support Texas Public Radio to ensure that this station stays on the air and keeps providing you the quality programming each and every day that you've come to love and depend on. The number is 1-800-622-8977. 8977, or you can go online to our safe and secure website. It's tpr.org.
You may find that Texas Public Radio is more important to you than ever before. Like so many, you may be listening longer, and maybe you find yourself tuning in more often. That's because you don't want to miss the day's news. You want to catch up on what Americans are doing overseas and right here at home. KSTX has become a more important part of your life recently, and now we're asking you to become a very important part of our life. A simple, quick, and easy phone call or visit our website, and you will make a difference for Texas Public Radio. So make that call right now, 800-622-8977, 800-622-8977, or visit us online at tpr.org. We started this pledge drive last Friday with a little over $1 million being our goal by this coming Friday. We're now below $400,000. Help us stay on track. Help us end this pledge drive early. Maybe we can wrap this up before the end of the day on Friday. Call now, 800-622-8977, or go online to tpr.org.
And the business memberships that I mentioned just before, if you are a business leader and you want to connect to your patrons through Texas Public Radio, there's never been a better chance than right now to make that call. You ask yourself, why should your business support KSTX? Besides being the right thing to do, it's the smart thing to do. Think about who listens to public radio. It's people just like you. And wouldn't you appreciate doing business with someone who is like-minded and informed? Nearly 110,000 individuals listen to KSTX every week. It's an audience you want to connect with, and you can do that for less than $10 a week. With your $500 contribution that can be broken up into monthly or quarterly payments, your business will be acknowledged repeatedly during this campaign and then once each week on KSTX for a full year. Or if you'd like to become a business or professional member on KSTX and our sister station KPAC, Classical Oasis, you can do so for an investment of $850. And if you're interested in a membership that covers KSTX, KPAC, and KTXI in the Hill Country, that investment is just $1,000, and it'll help you reach over 150,000 weekly listeners to all three stations. Give us a call, 1-800-622-8977. The lines are open right now. We need to try to meet this goal. About 6 business memberships. If you're a business leader, give us a call right now, 1-800-622-8977.
And you've been listening to The Source this afternoon. The Source is a locally produced daily one-hour call-in talk show that gives listeners in San Antonio the opportunity to call and connect with our in-studio guests and citywide audience. The Source seeks to give life, context, and breadth to the events and issues affecting San Antonio by bringing newsmakers and experts to the public and highlighting the people being affected by the news of the day. If you tune in to The Source for insightful discussion and analysis on topics that matter to residents of the Alamo City, please call in your support today. The number again is 800-622-8977, 800-622-8977, or visit our website at tpr.org to make a pledge. All Things Considered is coming up next. This is KST.